is going on, guys? We have an absolute banger of an episode for you today, baby. It's all done in ASMR. We're just whispering back and forth. Mandy Munoz, my very own mother. That's just her nickname. We gotta chat a little bit. Mandy and I met back in 2014 as we began our training to surf the Little Niños in Spain. Wow. It's been 6 years. Oh, man, that's crazy. I'm either getting old or my friends are sticking around. Mandy is a four-time NCAA Nationals cheerleading champion. That's crazy. She won back to back to back to back. That's insane. The competition is as elite as it gets. Mandy and I discuss her training, her coaches, and what it takes to be a champion. Don't you want to be a champion? If you enjoy the Nicholas Natale Show, you can show your support by heading on down to NicholasNatale.com/shop. You get 15% off your order when you use the promo code TheNicholasNataleShow15. Since you thought about supporting the podcast, I want to support you. Get ramped up with a grip of audiobooks from Audible. I'm giving listeners a 30-day free trial, baby. That's 30 days. Just head to audibletrial.com/TheNicholasNataleShow and get your 30-day free trial today. All right, let's get to the episode.
Hello. Hello, everybody. Hello and welcome. This is the Nicholas Natale Show. I am your host, Nicholas Natale. I am here with the most special of guests, Mom. Mandy Munoz, how's it hanging out there?
Oh, you know, it's good. On break right now. Well, I don't have school today for work, so just chilling.
That's nice. How do you like teaching those eighth graders? Are they giving you a run for your money?
Oh my gosh, yes. That's funny that you ask about the eighth graders because they drive me nuts, more so than all of my other students, but I love them. So they did give me a run for my money, but I still love them.
Do you think, how do they compare to when you were in eighth grade? Do you think it's significantly different, as in they're growing up with technology and all of this other stuff? Or do you think they're the same sweet children that we were?
No, technology has definitely influenced the way children act nowadays. And it's a huge, huge thing that, like, I think older teachers would say has changed the way we have to approach our students. Like, their attention span is little to none, which is, it's not their fault. I mean, technology has advanced and it's bettered the world and society, and it will continue to. And as educators, we'll have to continue to adapt to the way we teach our students, as we always should, because that's what makes an educator better, is always learning and adapting to our kids and being flexible. But yeah, they are definitely different than we were at least when I was in eighth grade. I mean, they have access to so many different things too. Like, the internet is at their fingertips. It's wild, but yeah.
That's true. How is it so much different? I remember when I was in eighth grade. Wow, this is bringing up memories. And I got kicked out of class quite a bit for being inappropriate, maybe too focused in class, you know, just hopping on every little detail. One time I convinced one of my friends to jump down a flight of stairs. That sounds so bad. To jump down, to like jump over this rail that like that goes along like four or five stairs. And so he went for it, and then he just landed straight on his crotch, and he was down and out for about 20 minutes. But that was the type of stuff that I was doing in eighth grade. But are kids just on their phone now? Do they get to have experiences like that? I don't know.
Oh my gosh, I probably would have yelled at you if that was you, Nick, if I was your teacher. Oh man. I don't watch the kids when they're outside playing and doing stuff like that. Mm. I'm sure they still do. But yeah, they're still kids. They're still gonna do, for lack of words, stupid things. Yes.
That's good. You know what? I had another joke that I thought was really funny. I'm gonna say it. so the t this teacher, my one of my science teachers, she used to like make everybody wait outside of class during passing period, and then she'd open the door when you could come in, you know? And so when she would open the door, I would get behind the door, and I would slap my hand on the door really hard, and I'd be like, "Oh my gosh, you just hit me on the head. What's wrong with you?" And she'd be like, "Oh my gosh, are you okay?" And then I'd be like, "I'm just playing." But I'd do it like 4 times a week, and she did it every time. She believed it every time.
Oh, I don't have any kids like that. My kids love me. So
well, that's good.
Oh man.
Why do they love you? Are you relatable, or are you just one of the gang? You know, just hanging out.
I think it's because I'm younger. The kids have a lot more to relate with me on than other teachers. Not to say that all of our other staff is old, but they are older than myself. And so I think that having a younger teacher definitely gives them a different type of perspective from the students instead of just having older teachers. I don't think I've ever had young teachers growing up. And so, and I mean, I love the fact that I can relate with them so much to a certain level. Sometimes they say stuff that I don't even know what the heck they're saying. And man, it makes me feel so old. But no, I love them. And I think it's because of the age, which I won't have forever. So I'm taking advantage of it. So yeah.
That's smart. What type of slang are they saying that's going over your head? Give me a quiz. Give me the slang quiz.
Oh, they said, like, "Oh, that slaps," or "pop off, sis." See, like, I don't even know what this stuff, I don't even know this stuff means. And they'll, like, tell me. Or, like, they all say period, which I've, like, heard that. One of them, like, in the beginning of school year was like, "Miss Munoz, say N-I-U." And I said it, and everybody lost it. And then they explained to me what it meant later, which it's nothing inappropriate.
What does it mean? I don't know that one. That one's over my head.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's based off of some, like, famous YouTube blogger, like, makeup artist. And it was a guy, and he was doing his makeup. And he was saying, "and I," like, talking about his makeup. And he dropped his, whatever.
Oh, and I oop. Yeah, yeah. Okay, uh-huh.
That's the true story, because I've heard different things, but yeah. So
I've seen I've seen that video. I thought you were spelling something. I thought you were saying NIU, like, take this person to the ICU, you know.
No. And then they all say, I don't know what that means. Like, every time I say mask, they, like, I don't even know. But
yeah, yeah, I don't get that. I don't get that one. I don't understand that one at all. I almost made a video about people saying slaps, and I don't know how I feel about it yet. I haven't quite determined my opinion on slaps, because I also think slaps is something you say about songs, right? People say, "Oh my gosh, this slaps. Boy, does this song slap," you know? But then on the flip side, I think people say, like, "this smacks" in regarding to food. And I think there should really only be one slang word that has one syllable in it. I think that's how it's got to be. You can only say "this song slaps" or "this food smacks," but you cannot say both all the time. It's too much. Am I off? Am I wrong?
I've never heard "smacks," but okay. I agree.
This food smacks. I don't know. Who's smacking my food? Maybe I don't have a good firm grasp on this lingo. Maybe I'm just too far off. Mom, I got a few questions for you.
Okay.
Are you ready for them?
I'm not ready, but let's do it.
Sweet. First of all, I want to know what your first impression of me was when we first came together. That sounds, when we first met. I don't know why I said it.
You freaking weirdo. So We met at team reveal for ISP. And remember, we met like we all like had to find our team and like where they were, and we came to like our little spot on the wall. Do you know what I'm talking about? Like we were in that little like hallway. I don't know. We were sitting in a circle, and we're walking over there, and we sat down in the circle, and we're going around saying our names. And I made eye contact with you, and you gave me like really crazy eyes. I was like, I felt really uncomfortable, but I was like, what the? I don't know if he realized he did that, but okay. Can I give him the benefit of the doubt and say, no, he doesn't know he did that? And you didn't really talk a lot, and I don't know why you were reserved, I guess, because you were meeting a group of strangers, which I guess makes sense. But yeah, I honestly, and then we took our I don't really remember a lot of like that night. I just remember little snippets. But I remember when we took our team picture, and I don't know, you can look at it now when we're holding our flag up for Spain. If you look at it now, that team picture, zoom in on your face, and you're making the same crazy eyes that you gave me in the circle. And that night I went home and looked at the picture, and I was like, man, that guy's eyes are just crazy.
This guy got murderized.
No, you're pretty chill. I mean, you didn't talk a lot. So you're like quiet kid with crazy eyes.
Gosh, now I'm like what they describe in all of the active shooter stuff. Great. Man, I don't remember that night. That's really funny. Like I remember it now that you're saying it, but that wasn't my first memory. That's funny.
You like made you were making weird like little noises every time someone talked. And I don't know if you were doing it on purpose. I'm pretty sure you were doing it for your own like humor.
Oh,
I was
for
like,
sure.
what the hell is wrong with this guy?
That definitely sounds like something I'm trying to make fun. Like a meet and greet where somebody's just making obscure sounds in the background. That sounds hilarious. That sounds about right. Oh
Okay.
man, that's funny. I only remember my first impression. I only remember when we met, like when we had to do our one-on-one meetings. Because everybody in the team had to do a one-on-one. And I just remember texting you, hey, do you want a match? So we wore matching clothes to meet each other. And I thought that was really funny. Because I don't think anybody else would match with me. I think you're the only one.
Oh man, that was awesome when you said you want to match. I was like, heck yeah, I want to match. Strange
Twinsies in the calf.
coincidence.
Yeah, wow. I'm starting to realize what a strong impression I was making. Jeez.
I was afraid if I didn't, you were gonna kill me.
This guy's gonna stare at me weird the whole hour we're together if I don't. Dang. And then you got the I am also I've been trying to backtrack this down. I don't know when I started calling you mom, and then like somewhere down the line you started calling me mom. Like that. Do you remember how you got the nickname Mom?
I don't remember. I don't know. I don't know. I feel like I always tell you to stop doing stuff or stop doing that, Nick, or act appropriate.
Yeah. You can't make those faces in public.
Oh man.
I guess that makes sense. I guess it all comes full circle.
Was literally my
So then we served on a team in España, in Spain, serving in the El Niños, serving the
kid.
children's. Yeah. What was your favorite memory from that time?
I'll tell you my least favorite memory.
Oh, hit me. Oh gosh.
My least favorite memory was when you got us lost in Spain on our second or like official first day there. I don't know. I think our team leaders told us, like, oh, go ahead and like just explore with your day buddy for like the next 2 hours or so, and just like, or just around the area, don't go too far. And you were like, we're gonna go far. Like, you looked at me and said that under your breath, and I was like, oh God, no, we're not. And so I remember this very vaguely. And we went downstairs, we went out, and you were like, oh, let's go to the left. I remember. And so we went out to the left, and I was following you. We were just like, oh, this is cool. Oh, that's cool. And then, like, we just kept walking. And then, like, you started making turns, and so I was following you. And then I was like, hey, you know, like, we should, like, not go too far. They said not to go far. And you're like, no, it's okay. We'll be fine. And I was like, okay, fine. So we kept going, and I kept following you. And then I remember we went down the street, and, like, we were like looking at the cars, and we're like, oh, the cars are so cool. The license plates are different, whatever. We kept walking, and then at one point, I was like, okay, no, like, now we've gone too far. And I was like, okay, Nick, like, we should start going back. And you were like, no, let's keep going. So you kept walking. And I was like, well, fudge. Like, I'm a little person. I'm a girl in a country I've never been in. So I had to follow the guy who was bigger. So I followed you. And eventually we got lost. And I started to freak out. I said, okay, maybe we should go back now. And you're like, yeah, maybe we should start walking back. Like, we'll go a different way, though. So we started to go a different way, which makes no sense. And so we started going back a different way. We weren't going back because we didn't know where we were. I was starting to low key freak out, and you were acting as chill as a cucumber, and it was really annoying me. And I was like, Nick, I think we're lost. And you were like, no, we're okay. And you knew we were lost, but you kept trying to say we were okay and kept going. And then you were like, okay, yeah. After like a few minutes, you're like, okay, yeah, I think we are lost. I lost it. I was like, are you kidding me? Oh man. Got to the point where we had to ask somebody like how to get back to our hostel because we didn't really even know where we were. And Nick, was it you or me who asked the police officer?
It was me, but I wish I hadn't. I wish it was you.
So we found a police officer, and I was like, oh, Nick, go ask him, how do we get back to this address? And you were like, I don't want to go ask him. And I was like, go ask him. So you went to go ask him. And you tried to say it in Spanish. You tried to ask, where is this address, or how do I get back in Spanish? And he looked at you confused, and I watched the whole thing happen. And then he started speaking English to you.
Ugh, I felt so dumb. I remember I was talking in Spanish and he just let me. And then I was like, I don't know, I can't get through this guy. And he was like, you want to go back to your hotel? And I was like, are you kidding me? You spoke English this whole time? What a dingleberry.
What a dingleberry. What a crusty dingleberry.
But I also remember there was so there was I remember there were so many rules with ISP. So we went through CBU to go serve, and I remember thinking in the back of my mind, I was like, you know what? There's a lot of rules. What if I just,
Break
what
a
if we
few.
just b bounced out of here first day, and and spent 3 weeks just doing whatever we wanted, and then on the last day we'll just catch the flight back. So when we were out and about, I was kind of just in my own mind like, you know what? Maybe it's not too bad out here,
No,
What if
you
we
and
just
Nick were even saying when we were getting the first time I said, I think we're going too far, Nick was like, it's okay, we're in Spain. Wouldn't you want to say we got lost in Spain someday? And I was like, oh yeah, that's kind of cool. No, it was not cool when we got lost because Nick even started to like get nervous.
Yeah, that was hilarious. But they also took all our phones from us, so we didn't have our phones, but I kept mine. I snuck it. So like I think that was also another reason that I felt like
You were
not too concerned. Like worst comes to worst, we would have found a way. That's hilarious though. That's really funny. But
We learned.
then
I said we found our way back.
Oh yeah. But then I think the other thing that was a beautiful thing that just nailed that trip together was no butter.
No.
And I think you could give the lowdown on no butter and how that butter spread.
Who was the first person to get no butter? So Nick said this thing, like we were in Spain and our day buddy was the person on our team we had to spend like most of our days with. Like when we were walking somewhere, like if you wanted to go to the grocery store, like I would have to go with my day buddy and it was Nick. Or like whatever. If we wanted to go do this, we had to be with each other. And Nick, since Nick and I had spent so much time together the first few days there, he was like, oh, we should play this game called No Butter. Like within the probably the second or third day there. And no, you know what? Actually, this started back before we left.
Yeah, I think so.
So No Butter started before we left to Spain as a team. And basically when No Butter, I don't know how to explain No Butter.
No butter. Beautiful game. I got you. It's pretty much calling out someone when they say they're gonna do something, but like, can they really back it up? So if you say, "Man, I'm gonna go kick that old lady," and someone says no butter to you, you have 24 hours to kick that old lady, or you can bribe that person out of like making you do it. But if you don't do it in 24 hours, you get your eyebrow shaved. Like you get, I think you get a line in your eyebrow. But
Yeah.
if you say, "I'm gonna kick that old lady, no butter," you're safe as long as you say it before somebody else no butters you, which is a revolutionary game. It really was. It was so dangerous, so bad.
Oh man. Our team leader was saying, "Oh, I'm gonna get a tattoo before we leave." And everybody on the team would like make jokes like, "I'm gonna do this. I'm gonna do that." And Nick would just say, "Oh, no butter." Like as fast as he could be eating a sandwich, mid-sandwich. He would say, "No butter," with food in his mouth. He was always on it, on his no butter game. And our team leader said she was gonna get a tattoo, and Nick no buttered her. And the whole team knew about the no butter rules. And our poor team leader didn't get the tattoo. Nick gave her some grace and said, "I will give you until the end of this trip, not 24 hours, to the end of this trip to get that tattoo." And she never got it. And so, nonetheless, last night of Spain, we were in
Got a
our
line
hostel.
in the eyebrow.
Yep, sure did.
Oh man. You know what? So we shaved a lot of eyebrows on that trip. Like we shaved people we didn't even know before that trip that we met in Spain. They got their eyebrows shaved. People that were working the camps we were working at, they got their eyebrows shaved. But I think our team lead handled it the best because she got a line in her eyebrow, but then she colored it in the next day, like with a pen. I couldn't even tell. It was magic. I was like, "Wow, you're going around the whole game here." It's amazing.
I forgot that we shaved some Spaniards' eyebrows in Spain.
Yeah. You know what? I got a whole video of all the shaved eyebrows that I'm gonna have to go just relive. There's actually a video of you, of you asking me after I shave somebody's eyebrow. You're like, "Do you feel bad about this?" And I'm like, "No." Just thought it was so funny. The other thing that I thought was hilarious that we did, like, hands down, still in my book, one of the funniest things that we've ever done. It's we were acting scared when people approached you was my favorite thing that we did. And my favorite one was when we were all eating together as a team at this restaurant, and the waiter came over to bring us our food and set it down in front of us. And you went, "Oh, you scared me." And the guy freaked out and flinched. It was perfect. I was like, "This is such a great game we're playing."
Between you and I, and nobody on our team knew what was going on.
Just all these guys are always scared. Everybody's sneaking up on them.
Was sitting next to me when I did that. She genuinely thought I was scared, and she hugged me and said, "Are you okay?"
Oh man.
Me, I couldn't laugh. I had to play it off. So I had to genuinely act like I was scared.
I can see me under my breath just being like, hold it, hold it. Don't ruin this for us.
That was hilarious.
What a, you know, we started a lot of games in Spain. But, you know, it's probably for the best that they got left there. I don't know if they, no butter kind of continued for like a week after Spain. And I was like, this is too dangerous. I can't live a whole life like this.
Oh, man.
Oh man, we're bad. All right, I'm gonna ask you about some other questions, some other things in the air. First question is, are you in that, have you watched the cheer documentary on Netflix?
Dude, you know I watched it. I already, like, I binged watched it the first like week it came out.
Dang. Are you in the freaking first episode? I feel like I saw your face in it. They do a cut of Daytona, and I think you're there.
No, I don't think I'm in that one. I wasn't there anymore. That little snippet they showed of CBU cheer, I wasn't there that year. Some of the girls, some of those faces that I saw, I didn't cheer with. Oh, wait, you know what? I was there. I don't know if I was actually in that little clip, though, they showed of CBU cheer.
I screenshotted it. I'll send it to you. I'm pretty sure your noggin is in a Netflix documentary. It's pretty impressive.
Thanks, Mom.
Pretty. I mean, dude. Also, consent-wise, did they ask you?
No.
I don't know. Shoot, dang. Netflix, you got a big lawsuit coming, baby. I'm just kidding. So, from what I can tell, I got many sources that have said you've been cheerleading since you were a child. You cheered. I mean, the only thing I can see is like you cheered for something called the Vikings, right? I don't know. Is that correct? When you're a child. No, that's I have different sources that gave me that information.
You stalked my Instagram.
I actually called your mother before this and had her tell me everything about you.
Oh, okay. Yeah, since I was little, all the way up into college, it was a dream of mine to be a college cheerleader. So, checked that off my bucket list at CBU.
And nice.
Ended up being a blessing, yeah.
And I want to know, was your high school cheerleading team as competitive? Or, like, when you were doing cheer in high school, did you do it through your school? Or is there another route to do that? Because, I mean, I'm not going to say anything, but I feel like I've seen my high school cheerleading team and it, you know, they weren't nearly at the level that I've seen in college.
Yeah. No, I did high school cheer and I also did all-star cheer for like two seasons. All-star cheer is a lot more skill, like the skill level is a lot better than high school level, but there are some high schools that are really good. And then there are some high schools that just are traditional cheer teams. There's like so many different approaches to cheer nowadays. It's crazy. There's like traditional, there's competitive. It just depends on like what the coach and the school is trying to aim for on their program. So maybe like your school cheer team wasn't
geared for competition.
Yeah. And the skills aren't there, and that's fine. I mean, they're probably more just a traditional cheer team, like when it originally started out, when cheer started out. But, yeah, I did cheer in high school, and my cheer team in high school, I thought, it's funny, I was just talking to somebody about this yesterday. I thought I was good in high school until I went to college tryouts. And I went to college tryouts, and I was like, man, I suck. Like, I'm not going to make any college cheer team because – the level of college skills is incredibly different and harder than it is in high school. But you also have to consider the fact that, like, you're only doing high school skills because you are in high school. You're not doing college level skills or learning them because you're not there yet.
Right.
But thankfully, I was able to learn pretty quickly on how to pick up those college skills when I got recruited for CBU cheer.
It seems like, man, it seems super intense, and I kind of want to know what your coach's style was, because I saw a few quotes. It seems like this is what they're ingraining, like the work is worth it, why not us? Is that stuff they said? Were they yellers, encouragers, motivators? Like how what was the intensity like, and how were the coaches pushing you and training you?
So, my coaches were amazing at CBU. They're no longer the coaches there at CBU Cheer, but like the work is worth it. That is a slogan from the National Cheerleaders Association that hosts nationals at the end of every season in Daytona, Florida. And so, NCA, National Cheerleaders Association, they have this slogan where it says, like, the work is worth it. And meaning, like, it's talking about, like, from the beginning of your season, like, putting in the hard work, like, from the day you start and the every minute you're in the gym, like, you are working hard because when you go to nationals and you perform, like, you realize that the work you've put in is worth it. And so that's probably what you're getting that from, what you're hearing it from. And a lot of college cheerleaders who do go to nationals in Daytona, Florida, will always, like, say the work is worth it. And it's such a motivating quote because it's so true. But I mean, the coaches at CBU, when I was there, they were, or they are, the most incredible coaches. They are very well known in the cheer world. I actually just ran into Coach Tammy at USA College Nationals yesterday in Anaheim at the convention center. And yeah, they're hard. They yelled. And their coaching style is absolutely incredible because, I mean, we won like so many years back to back, and they continue to win back to back every year. Like CBU just won at USA Nationals, and it was their
Dang.
yesterday, and it was their ninth win at USA. Yeah, pretty amazing. And even though Coach Tammy isn't there anymore, coaching the CBU cheer team, her like legacy and her approach on how she trains her athletes, mentally, physically, spiritually, is passed down to the current coaches who are doing the same thing she's done. And I think what makes them like so outstanding is the fact that like they train us hard. Like they train us so incredibly hard, and they put us in every type of situation for us to be ready to adapt to, so that when we do go out to compete and when we do get put in strenuous situations, we know how to, I guess, adapt or accommodate ourselves to the situation and keep going. Yeah. CBU Cheer is amazing. The coaches are amazing. The coaches still are amazing, even though they're no longer the ones that I was coached by. But it was hard. It was extremely hard. And there were, I remember my freshman year going on to CBU Cheer. I probably left practice every day crying because of how hard it was, just mentally on your body. Because it's not that you're not physically capable of doing it, it's more of a mental thing. And I feel like that's how it is for most sports, anyways. It's more mental than physical.
Right. So how are they putting you in those environments to be prepared for it? Because from everything that I could tell, it seems like Daytona is its own beast. It's its own atmosphere and environment. How do they get you to like be prepared for a moment where, I don't know, it seemed like thousands of people are watching you. This is the biggest moment of the whole season, that everything you've worked up to is in these, I don't know how long the sequences are, like 2 minutes, 5 minutes, but those few minutes that you have. Like, how do they emulate something like that so when you get there, you're not in shock?
We train really hard. So we would go on top of the gym in the sun, like, 'cause when you're in Daytona, you practice on the beach in the sun, and it's really humid over there. So we practice for spring break practices on top of the roof of the athletic gym for like 3 hours, and we will do our normal warm up. We will actually work out up there so that we are like in the sun, like kind of putting ourselves in a similar environment of what it's like over there. And then, I mean, I don't want to give too much away because
The competition, my it's that competitive? That's nuts.
never know.
Dang. All right. Well, then I'll ask you this. So it seems like also the whole goal internally, like within the team, I don't know. I kept seeing the phrase like meet the mat. How many people are on the cheer team, and what is the competitiveness like internally when you're competing with your own teammates just to get a spot to be at nationals?
Yeah. So there's only 20 spots on the mat for the team, and there's about 25 girls on the competition team at CBU, and they always have 5 extra girls to alternate in case anything ever happens to one of the 20 that are actually on the mat. But all first semester at school, when you're practicing, you are basically competing against your own teammates. So there is no time to slack off. There is no time to be lazy. And even like, I remember going into practice sometimes being sick, and when you're sick, it affects your performance. And I was like, I cannot be sick. Like, are you kidding me? I would be so upset, because any little thing where you show a moment of weakness or a moment of not improving or being better than you were the day before was a moment you were giving yourself the chance to be taken off the mat. And so it's insane. Like, I was, after practices, I was like going to the gym after and like constantly working out, constantly making sure that I was eating correctly. Because, I mean, you love your sisters that are next to you at practice, but you also want to be on that mat because it's something that you won't get back. And yeah, I mean, it's definitely mentally exhausting, which I think probably was why my freshman year being exposed to that, I was crying so much at the end of practices because I'd be like really hard on myself. Yeah. And just being exposed to that type of environment is very emotionally draining. But the work is worth it. Like, I can't, I mean, it speaks for itself.
So was in the end,
you still love your teammates. Like, you're all still going for the same thing. So we're all still encouraging each other. Like, there is no vicious behavior or like, she did this or she's terrible, or I can't believe that she got them out. Like, it's not like that at CBU, which like, I'm so thankful for. Like, that's such a blessing, because I'm sure there's a lot of programs that are like that.
It's like, as you get better, everybody gets better sort of thing. Like, there's still that, it's, what is the motivating factor to be the one on the mat? Is it purely the experience, or it's like, what was your, because to do that every day, like, you really do have to want it bad. What did you want so bad?
Well, my dream was to be a college cheerleader. Just being on that program was, like I said, a blessing in itself. But like, seeing your own teammates working their butts off was so motivating, and like the level of skill and talent that was on that team made you want to be better. And I mean, I feel like that's how it is in all things in life. Like, if I'm surrounded by amazing teachers, I want to be an amazing teacher and keep working hard and keep learning new things. And that's how it was in the gym. Like, these girls were incredible athletes, and like I said, I came from high school level cheer who didn't ever have these college skills. So that was like a huge motivating factor for us. And then our coach, Jason, always used to tell us like, what's your why? Like, what's your why? Why are you doing this? Why are you doing this? And he always centered it back to Christ, just telling us that like, God gave you these incredible abilities and talents like to do with your body. And we honor Christ by doing our best in every skill that we learn, in every skill that we do, for it to be perfect, and it all goes to the glory of God. And when we get to step on that mat in front of other schools, like, we are representing Christ with CBU on our uniform. And like, win or lose, as long as we do our best, like, we are honoring and glorifying Christ. And so that was like a huge thing too, like a huge motivating factor, because there are times where you have bad practices, or like, not everybody's motivated in the gym, but like, when you know your why, you keep going.
Yeah. Man, that is so powerful. Dang.
True. So, like, that program, it's incredible. Yeah. Like, you learn so many different things, like, as an athlete in that program that you carry outside with you in life, which is why, like, CBU Cheer is such an amazing program. And somebody posted this, like, a few years ago, one of my teammates, saying, I forget what the quote is, but it's like, from the outside looking in, you don't understand, but from the inside looking out, it was like some like incredible quote, but it's so true. And a lot of these girls like carry everything they learn from CBU cheer into like their professional lives after they're done in their cheer career. But yeah, I
In
mean, a
what
lot of
way?
it's
Knowing their
powerful.
why?
Yeah, knowing their why, learning the different obstacles you have to overcome and the different people that you end up working with. That's, I mean, as an athlete, I mean, you could take that into your work field. You're going to work with so many different types of people, people you like, people you don't like, but you have to, like, you all have the same goal in common, so you have to learn to work together. Yeah, even like the I don't want to say like slogan, but like the motto of like CBU cheers, like passion, God, success. And we go through this huge like meeting with our freshmen or all of our new girls, all of our rookies that come in. We teach them the meaning about passion, God, success, and like why it's such a huge thing for us in CBU cheer that, I mean, every athlete gets tattooed on their bodies before they leave the program, passion, God, success, or PGS, because it is something that we really drill into our girls there at at CBU. And it's something that you can take out of, like I said, like cheer and bring it into your own life. And we learn like the different meaning and how to apply each of those things to our life and to the program when we're in it.
Start doing mid-roll stuff today, baby. When I got introduced to ASMR, I'm hooked. This podcast is supported from merch purchases, so go ahead on down to thenicholasnatalie.com/shop and use code thenicholasnatalieshow 15 for 15% off your order. Also, our audiobooks, just the best. Head on over to audibletrial.com/thenicholasnatalieshow. For 30 days of free audiobook listening. Yes, I'm incredibly active on Instagram. You didn't ask, but I'm gonna tell you. I'm incredibly active on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. My username for all of them is Nicholas Natalie. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe you saw it coming. So please reach out to me on there, any of those social media platforms, and let me know your thoughts about the podcast. We can chat. Don't forget to subscribe. Don't forget to like. Don't forget to share it. Tell your grandmother. Anyway, let's get back to the episode. Goodbye.
Passion, God, success. Why those three words in specific? What about them makes that special?
So passion, God, success was something that I believe Coach Jason and Tammy started up, but they wanted to give the team a motto to kind of have some type of motivating factor to our program and give it more of like a deeper meaning. And they chose those three words because, well, passion is something that you can apply to cheer or any sport that you're doing. And it's like if you don't have passion behind what you're doing, you will burn out pretty quickly. And so we were all on that program. They told us, like, you're all on this program. You were all chosen to be here for a reason, but because you know you love cheer and like you want to be, or you have a passion for it. And so we have passion as one of our words. And then we have God, which is in the middle, because obviously it is a Christian school. We are so blessed to say that through Christ we can do all things. And without Christ, we can't do anything. And so when you have passion for something that you're going after, or something that you love, or something that you're doing and you're working hard at, and then you have Christ in the center of it, what I've said earlier is like giving you these abilities and these talents to do the things that you are doing, it leads you into being successful. And being successful doesn't always mean like coming out on top as a champion, or like being the winner or being the best, but being successful at everything that you're doing in itself is a success, whatever that standard you've set for yourself is. And so that kind of was something that we were always like emphasized on for the cheer program was, we have to have passion if we're going to be here. We have to have passion if we're going to be working hard and putting ourselves through these strenuous workouts every day. Because if we don't have that passion, there's no reason for us to be here in the first place. And then we have to have Christ at the center of all things that we do. And he is our why. And then with that, we would be successful in all things that we tried to achieve. So, yeah, Passion God Success. Really big thing of that program. And it's like a really big, like, either you're in it or you're not as a part of that team. For the we call it like the PGS fam.
And the success portion of like setting your own standard of like what your best is, and like those days where you were super hard on yourself, is it difficult to like find comfort in that standard? Does that make sense? Like for me in my life, most of my frustration comes from not meeting a standard I've set for myself, and like falling beneath that. So that success mark, is it like, how is it viewed in the program? Because it's a goal, but it's also like an internal mindset in a way of like, am I being the best? But then it's always like, well, I probably could have gone a little harder in practice, but I don't know. What did that mindset look like?
There's been times where we've fallen short of our own standards. So like when we go to Daytona, we have to compete in what's called prelims. And at prelims, like it's every team that qualified for nationals gets to go and compete at prelims. And then they choose the top teams out of prelims to go to finals the next day. And there's been times where we've gone to prelims and we've dropped stunts, or a pyramid didn't hit the way it was supposed to, or something just went wrong and we took like a hit for it. And I mean, obviously that wouldn't be something we would consider to be a success. But in moments like that, our coaches were so good at reminding us that like, no matter what we do, I don't know if this really answers the question, but like, no matter what we do, they like always love us. Like we can go out there and drop every single stunt if that was the case. And they would still love us. Because the program wasn't just about like being successful skill wise. And they had such a huge influence on us as our coaches that like they see it being more of a success for them for us to leave that program and have a walk with Christ, like have faith and to really just be good people. Even if you weren't like if you're walking away from that program, not as a believer, but to mold these girls into amazing people who are going to influence the world for a greater reason. I mean, and we would hope that would be for God's kingdom, but like that's the bigger success. And that's something I've learned too, as like becoming a cheer coach. Like I can only train these girls so much skill wise and I can't do it for them. But like the biggest success for me would be to watch them walk away with bigger life lessons and leave the program as a better person for Christ. So
yeah, it outlasts the season.
And I mean, these coaches have like, they've impacted me. I mean, personally, they've impacted me, in such a positive way, spiritually and mentally outside of cheer after I've left. But yeah, I mean, going back to cheer, it is hard when you like fall short of your successes because you hold yourself to high standards, like you were saying. But I guess it's more about learning. They've also taught us like learning how to dust yourself off, pick yourself up and keep moving forward and try at it again. Maybe try a different approach if the first few times didn't work, and keep going because you have a passion for it, right? And God's going to bring you through.
I love that. Yeah, that definitely makes sense. I think it's, people are so interesting in their depth and so complicated. Like training a skill set down to its like core, like the best you can be in a skill, still I don't think will ever define a person as a whole. And like the fact that it is beyond just a season and it is beyond just nationals is so important, because it's still who you are. You know, when cheer practice is over, like you're not a cheerleader, you're Mandy. You know what I mean? Like it's not your whole identity. So that's pretty dope. It kind of reminds me of, like, I don't know. I think of LeBron James, probably arguably one of the best basketball players to ever play the game, but I still don't see him being a one-dimensional person of only basketball. And I think that's the same for anything that we do. We're not one-dimensional, and that's why it's so important to have all three of those, passion, God, and success. I don't know. You know? It's just my little take on it.
No, you're right. And especially, like, with the whole thing that, like, with Kobe, too, that just recently happened. Like, he was a great and incredible basketball player, but he was also an amazing person outside of his basketball career who, like, poured into other people. That same passion that he had. And he was so into more of just having that more relational aspect with his athletes, I guess you would say. I don't know too much about Kobe, honestly, but I've learned a lot about him recently after the incident. But yeah, it's so true. Like, learning how to take those things outside of sports and apply them to your own life is so important. It's so integral as an athlete. Like, if you don't get that out of being an athlete, like, you just have skills, like, man, that's a bummer. I hope you get something out of it that you can take into life with you.
My other question for you then is, how did you, I'm curious about, how did you balance those internal relationships with teammates? Because, like, to me, like, cutthroat competitiveness, like, I don't think that makes you a bad person in any way, but you definitely, like, you don't treat people, I don't know if tree is the right word, you don't act the same way in practice as a competitor as you do outside of practice or competition. How did you find that balance in your personality, and how did you find yourself acting towards your teammates when you're all competing for a spot?
Not gonna lie, sometimes I'd be upset. I was very intimidated by girls who obviously had better skills than me. But, like, I mean, I can't express it enough. Like, in the end, we're all going for the same thing. And there were seasons where I didn't make mat. Like, I didn't make the mat, and I ended up being an alternate. And, man, that was really hard for me to come to grips with. But, like, looking back on it, like, I still loved them. I still treated them the same. I encouraged them to do their best because, I mean, we're still sisters. Like, yeah, it is very cutthroat, and it is competitive, and it is heartbreaking if you don't make the mat. But, I mean, to sit in your own anger is a lot less fun to do than it is to just simply encourage and uplift your teammates. They're like, the whole first semester when you're training before coach announced who makes the mat, it is so physically and mentally exhausting and emotionally exhausting, because you're never, like, resting, you're never, like, turning your back to what your teammates are doing, because whatever they're doing, you want to do it better. But it's such a family at the same time. Like, I know it sounds like those are two headbutting perspectives to look at, but, like, you're still, like, encouraging one another because you all, like, want the same thing in the end, and you all still love each other, and you're spending so much time together. It's much better to love on each other than it is to literally be cutthroat with each other. So I think internally you're like, still, oh man, like, I want to be better. Like, oh man, like, I wonder if she's going to get that skill. Or, I mean, you don't ever wish bad on a person. I never did. And I don't think anybody ever does either. But you're always on edge. It's just probably not very healthy. It's actually not healthy at all, to be honest. But, I mean, when you're on edge like that, it's incredible things that you learn. Like, how, like, you didn't realize you could learn stuff when you're on edge like that fast and that good. So,
learn quick. The level of focus is amplified. I want to know how it was when you first got to Daytona and you got the first dub, what that felt like. And then in comparison, so to be clear, you guys won 4 years in a row, all 4 years that you were there. The first time you were there, and then also the feeling of the last one going into it and how that one felt and how those were, I don't know, different or the same experiences.
So the first one, when I came in my freshman year, CBU cheer had lost at Nationals. They got second place by 0.05.
Ooh.
Yeah. Not even like half a point. And I remember coming in my freshman year, and these girls were so hungry to win at Nationals. I was like, man, I thought my first few practices, like, man, all they care about is winning. But they had that taste in their mouth of getting second place for something that was so small, not even like half a point or not even a quarter of a point. And I understand that. So when we went that year, my freshman year, we worked incredibly hard. Like, the program every year gets better. The skills get better. They work harder every year. I don't know how they do it. I don't know how we did it when I was there, but we do. And
yeah.
When I was at Nationals yesterday watching them warm up, I was like, these girls are machines, like literal machines. They're incredible. We went to Nationals and we won my first year. I remember I cried my eyes out, like happy tears. And it's really cool. Like, we worked really hard and we deserved it. And that first win was like the first win CBU cheer had ever won. And so to be a part of that was incredible and exciting. And I think that first win was my favorite and the best one because we worked so hard. And the veterans that were on the team that were like constantly motivating us, constantly pushing us, our coaches that were constantly pushing us, like, it was so authentic and genuine. Like, we hadn't won anything yet. So it was different ones that came after. Because I feel like after we won our first one, we went back for our second one and we were like, oh, we're going to go back to back. And like, not that we weren't humble about it, because our coaches were so good about saying like, humble hearts, even when we won our first one, when we were on the mats and they were doing the award ceremony. I remember Coach Jason just saying, standing behind us, humble hearts, humble hearts, humble hearts. And we didn't know if we'd won yet. And we were just like, we know we'd hit a good routine, and we hit, like, everything was amazing. Everything was flawless. And we had some really good competitors in our division, and CBU cheer like just came out of nowhere. Like, we were that program that just like rose up out of like Riverside, California. Nobody knew who we were until we were CBU cheer, like, which is what we are now. Like, everybody knows of CBU cheer when we go to Daytona. But
it's true.
Yeah. I remember him saying like, humble hearts. And I remember like very vaguely him telling us that. And then when we won, like, it was so well deserved. It was so, like, well deserved. Like, I don't feel bad saying that, because we did work so hard that season to get to that place. And so did every other competitor we had. I mean, we had really good competition, but our coach always told us too, like, you don't want to win because other teams dropped and made mistakes and that you hit a good routine and that's why you win. Like, you want to win because everybody hits and you deserve to win. Like, everybody had a flawless routine and you've worked harder and yours was just better and you've executed it better. And that's like a deserved win. And that's what it was for us. And then my last year, I mean, once you get a taste of it, your first year, you're like, man, I'm coming back and I'm going harder the next year. And that's what it was. And so every year, I think that's like what it was for us. And every incoming rookie who came in, when they would win their first time, as we kept winning, they'd like, their thirst to keep winning is there. And it's amazing. But the last one was really emotional for me. And the fact that like, I poured so much into that program and so much into those current athletes who were going to be there for years after I was gone. It was just, it was really sad because it's such a good program. There's so much depth to the way it started from the beginning to where it is now that it's hard to, I don't want to say walk away, because you're not like walking away from it. Like, you're finished, you're done, your time, but like to be done with it, like you can no longer do more. is just like, man. And I felt good. Like I wasn't crying like emotional, like, oh, I'm never gonna be able to do this again. Like I cried because like my whole college career was included cheer. But after that, like there's no professional cheer team. Like you can go and be a professional volleyball player, you can go and be a professional baseball or basketball player, but like for cheer after college, that's it. Like there's nothing after that. And
And that makes
so
me wonder, do you, what do you think, what do you wish the future was for competitive cheerleading? Do you wish there was something beyond college, and what would that look like? Olympics? I don't know.
I mean, there's a USA cheer team who goes up against like other countries in the world. Like there's like so many different types of cheer competitions, but like the big ones for college it's NCAA Nationals or UCA. We've never done UCA, but I don't know much about UCA. And then like after college it's not an Olympic team necessarily, but there is a team called the USA cheer team, and they represent us, and they go against other countries in the world, and like they are like athletes who used to cheer in college and continue to do it. I don't know a lot about what it entails, like if they get paid for it, like professional cheerleaders, or if, like, I don't know what it is, but they go around the world and they perform and they compete against all these other countries and their cheer teams. But it's not like the Olympics, like gymnastic Olympics or anything like that. I don't know if there ever will be one, honestly, like a professional cheerleading competition team kind of thing.
Why don't you think so? It's just not in the
Cheer,
cards.
yeah, I don't know. Cheer just got CAF sanctioned a sport like a few
Yeah,
years
true.
ago. Cheerleading has now evolved in so many different ways. There's this thing called stunt the sport, which takes like the tumbling and stunting aspect of cheerleading into an actual sport in college. So cheer's just evolving. Like there's different things being pulled from it. There was a thing at one time called acro and tumbling in college, which also just pulled like the tumbling and stunting aspect out of cheerleading and not more of like the dance and the chant part. But there's so many different things going on in the cheer world. Where it's I don't even know what's going on, honestly. There's so many different opportunities, different ways you can approach the sport and practice it. But I don't know. I just don't think that there is ever going to be offered a time for cheer to really be an Olympic sport or anything like that. I definitely think it should be, if I'm being honest,
Yeah.
because they are athletes.
Oh, for sure. The level of difficulty seems incredibly high to pull off the stuff that I was seeing. There also is like professional like sports teams cheerleaders, but those seem more like dance teams than cheerleading.
Yeah,
So I
that's
don't think
not cheer at
that's a route
all.
either. Yeah, it's completely different.
That's more of
So
like put
that
on your makeup and your it's more like put on your makeup and your cute uniform and go shake your pom-poms kind of cheer. That's not, no, I'm serious. Like that's what that is. Like go
Your
watch the Lakers.
metaphorical pom-poms?
Yeah.
I close my eyes during halftime. I'm sorry.
Nicholas, I'm a proud mom.
Gotta be. What do you think? So, yeah. What do you wish people knew about cheerleading? Like, what's a misconception?
I don't think there's a misconception because, like I said earlier, there's like so many different approaches to cheer, like traditional cheer. And then there's like youth rec cheer. There's so many different things to cheer. It just depends. Like, if you're going to stereotype cheer, and you shouldn't, I think that you should really look at the cheer team you're looking at and decide and figure out like what is their purpose of what they're doing in their uniform. Are they competing against other schools? Are they just gonna be here to cheer on a football team on Friday nights? And then like if depending on what their purpose of their program is, you can make the judgment. But there are different foundations laid down for different types of cheerleading programs that I feel like most of the time people get confused with. Like they just think of traditional cheerleading as in getting dressed in a uniform and cheering on a sports team, and it's evolved from cheer programs doing that and also going to competition or cheer teams just doing competitions. So it just depends on like what their goals are that I feel like most people just aren't aware of. Like they're not clear about. And so when people think of cheerleading, they just think of like cheerleaders in a uniform with their makeup shaking their pom-poms. But it's pom-poms. Evolved. Yeah, the metaphorical pom-poms. It's evolved so much. It's changed. So, and I think it's becoming a little more clarified popular. For people. Yeah, popular. And people are noticing too, like, oh, these cheerleaders are actually athletes. Or rousing, well, these cheerleaders are just cheerleaders. And like, not that anything's wrong with that. But
yeah, yeah. There's different levels for sure. Yeah. All right, Mom, we're approaching the end of this podcast, and I'm going to hit you with one final question, and it's going to be the biggest doozy of them all. The biggest doozy of a question the world of podcasting has ever seen before. Are you ready for it?
Yes.
All right, let's say you know those tin cans with a string and then you tie it to another tin can.
Yeah.
And you can talk into it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So let's pretend you have a tin can with a string on it. And on the other side of this string is a tin can that goes into everybody's individual ear holes. And you have the opportunity to tell the world something that you know to be absolutely true in your life. What are you saying to the world into your tin can?
I feel like I can preach.
You could. To every person. Every person.
What would I say about my life?
What's a truth that you know based on the experiences of your life?
Lord Jesus. Honestly, I just want to share my favorite Bible verse. That's what I would do.
What is it?
It's Romans 5:8. Romans 5:8. You are loved more than you will ever know by somebody who died to know you. And it's talking about Jesus on the cross dying for you. I feel like that's a huge thing. At least for me in my life, that like knowing that no matter what I go through, no matter what I'm doing, I'm obviously doing it all for the glory of Christ, for his kingdom. But like in those harder moments, it's hard to want to keep going and just remembering that like Christ died for me and took on all of my sins and all of my filth and all of my, that he loves me and he died for me, before like I was even me.
Yeah. Before you're created. Love it. I love that answer. I think that's splendid. Mom, where can we find you on the internet?
On Instagram. I don't know what you're asking. Okay. What are you asking? The media?
Asking,
like, what are you asking?
What are your handles, Mom? Jeez. Tell the people if they want to connect with you.
Over there, are you slamming doors?
I slammed the door because I was so infuriated by you not wanting to connect on a personal level with the people listening at home.
Instagram handle is _Schmandy, Schmandy. Schmandy.
It's Schmandy. Dope, Mom. It has been the absolute pleasure having you on the podcast. Thank you so much. I am very thrilled that you were on it. It makes my heart warm that you came on the show.
Cool. Well, I mean, you forced me to do this, so I'm just kidding.
I did. You're actually the first guest to be paid, so.
No, I was really nervous when you asked me to do this, TBH. I didn't know what to expect. I thought it was going
to
be a joke.
Was it a joke the whole time?
No, it was actually like, I feel like you and I haven't talked like this in a while. Like, had a
I
good
know.
talk.
Let's do. We need to do this more often. Let's make this happen.
All we do is joke around.
That's true. That's because when we see each other, we have to joke around to make up for all the jokes we haven't gotten to say.
You're not wrong.
True. Okay. So, bye. Well, that's. I'm not saying bye to you. I'm saying bye to the kids at home.
Okay.
Bye. You're not gonna say bye to the kids at home? Gosh, bye.
Okay, bye.
There you go. All right, I'm stopping it.